It's the most all-star studded challenge ever. And this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars. New season now streaming on Paramount Plus. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.
From the world of Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, April 26th on Paramount Plus.
Yes!
Welcome back into the Line for the podcast. I am Tyler Donahue. We've got a great show in line for you here to wrap up this first week of May. If you missed our first episode of the week, we did a lot of NFL draft recap conversation about the six draft picks from the 2022 Nittany Lions program. Also went into some of the undrafted opportunities that the guys got in free agency. And we had Tyler Cavaruso to break down the landscape of Penn State recruiting, which is changing day by day when the 2024 class coming up towards official visits, the commitments popping up now at 13 for the 2024 cycle. So a lot went on last episode. We're going to lead this one off with the recruiting conversation, but it's really not so much recruiting anymore as it is roster conversation, because he is on the verge of going from a signee to a Penn State freshman, and he is with us here in the Lions 24/7 podcast, London Montgomery. I've been looking forward to this conversation for a while. I'm glad we were able to make it happen. I know it's a busy time for you. You're in crunch time before you enroll, so thank you for making some time for us.
Of course, anytime.
Look, you are, from we record here on a Wednesday, about 10 days out from making this move over to Happy Valley. What is on your checklist between now and then to handle your business back home?
I just want to get all my schoolwork in. That's first and foremost. Finish up PT. I just want to see everybody home before I leave out. Tell them thank you for everything they've done for me.
You had a great run at Scranton Prep, getting ready to make this move as an in-state prospect over to Penn State. Has it sunk in that you are really this close? Are you waking up and it's the first thing on your mind? And when you're going to bed, are you thinking about it on the pillow?
I mean, I can't stop thinking about it. I'm a little nervous. That's expected, but it's like nervous excitement. So, I just want to get down there. I haven't played my senior year, so, I just want to go out there and do the best I can, I have been thinking about it a lot. Between school and the athletics, so I'm just overall excited.
You described it as a nervous excitement. When's the last time, if ever, that you felt this nervously excited about something?
Probably my freshman year at Scranton Prep. My first carry. I was just like nervous excitement then, and I'm pretty sure the butterflies will knock out once I get down there.
You mentioned that you're going through the wrapping up PT back in your hometown. With that physical therapy that you've been going through, it's now 9 months, I think, removed from the knee injury suffered last August during preseason work. Where are you right now physically as you work your way back?
I'm almost back. I mean, I feel almost back. I still have to do some rehab. I got to get some muscle mass on my legs. I feel good. And I feel like I'm going to be coming back soon.
Now, 2,300-plus rushing yards as a junior. James Franklin told us during his signing day press conference that they, as a staff, felt like you could go for 3,000 rushing yards during your senior season if you were able to play. Obviously, as we addressed, you didn't get to suit up for any games during the last fall. So that missed opportunity. How did you bounce back mentally, and how long did that take?
When I first tore my ACL, I was upset, obviously, but, I just took it with a grain of salt, and I told myself that I can't keep thinking in the past and I had to move forward. So I just moved on with that mentality. I just focused on school, physical therapy and doing everything. And I just kept setting goals for myself. So, that I felt like, I accomplished things as I moved on. So that kind of helped me as I moved on through physical therapy through these 9 months.
Now, that injury occurred about 1 month after you committed to the Nittany Lions and joined this class. What was the reaction you got immediately upon learning that that's what the test results were, that it was that significant of an injury? What kind of a reaction did you get from the Penn State staff?
They just reassured me that I would be okay. They took care of me. They said I would be all right. I would come back stronger. They made me feel like, I'll be okay, basically. They just stood by my side the whole way. And I'm glad they did that. And that's the reason I chose them, because they make me feel at home and everything. And this is what I'm getting out of it.
I guess specifically with Jaywon Sider, how has your relationship maybe changed with him dealing with your time away from action and maybe having some conversations like the one you just discussed where, you know, it's personal. It's not so much just about the X's and O's and the football stuff. It's about what you're dealing with and going through as a young man. How much have you been able to kind of lean on him and use him as a soundboard even before you get to campus?
He's been in my corner ever since it happened. And you know, he's just been teaching me things. You know, I've been learning mentally, you know, like you said, on and off the field, I've been learning mentally, even though not doing anything physically. So, you know, I'm just been, strengthening my mental, getting it right. You know, I'm just doing other things that I couldn't do physically, and he's been helping.
I apologize. Was there a moment in your process here, recovery process, where your confidence was back? I mean, it sounds like you're confident now, but this is 9 months into it. Was there a moment or maybe a session where you got through it and you came out the other side feeling increasingly positive?
I'd say right when I was able to start lifting again. And, you know, my dad's always been telling me that I'm going to be okay. And then that he's been in my corner also. So he's always boosting my confidence up. But, yeah, I think, like I said, as I set goals for myself, I gained more and more confidence. So maybe 1 week I was able to do, let's say I was, like, the first week I was able to bicycle around for the first time, like, do a full rotation. I felt real good after that. Then I started walking normally. So those are some small things that built up to my confidence being like this now.
And how much of a strong plan is in place between you and the Penn State staff and the training staff over there in Happy Valley about what you're going to be entering into as you get to campus? You're going to have about 11 weeks between your enrollment and preseason camp. Do you think it's realistic that you're going to be able to participate early on in preseason camp?
It's just all how rehab goes. It just depends on how I perform and everything. So, you know, I'm just taking it slowly and seeing how everything goes right now.
And so you and Cam Wallace both going to get to campus, and so is Trey Potts. And that was an interesting addition to the 2023 running back room that he announced that commitment about a month ago. And now here he is after 4 years with Minnesota, making the move to campus right as you are. What did you make of that? And having another veteran presence in the room, and have you had any communication with Trey Potts, or will you guys kind of be getting to know each other as you go along here?
I'll be getting to know him once we move in and everything. But, you know, we were kind of light in the running back room, so I kind of understand why Penn State picked up another running back. So, you know, me, Cam, and Trey are going to compete. You know, we're going to work. We're going to push each other. So I'm excited kind of because, you know, he's a veteran. He can teach me a few things, and I can learn off of him maybe.
How transparent was Jaywon Sider about that process when they were pursuing, you know, a college veteran? And how did he keep you informed, I guess? Because it's certainly not something he wanted to surprise you with, I would imagine.
He just told me straight up. He told me before it came out on social media. He's just like, hey, we're light in the running back room. And, you know, we just wanted another veteran in the room. And with me being with my knee and everything, we just wanted to make sure that everything was going to be all right.
What did you make of Cam Wallace? I'm sure you've had a chance to check out some of his film from his senior season by now, me get familiar with him a bit more and coming into that running back room out of Georgia. What did you make of him being that compliment to you, that second component of a two-man running back class?
Well, Cam's my boy. But, you know, I thought of it as, like I said, competing. He's a fantastic athlete. He has great speed. He's from Georgia. The Southern boys got some good speed with him. But, you know, I'm just excited to go down there and work with him and see, like I said, maybe I could teach him a few things. He could teach me a few things, and we could just push ourselves, work harder and everything.
You said that Cam's your boy. How have you guys been able to develop a bond? You don't live around the corner from each other. You can't just get together at the local weight room. How have you two been able to kind of do that?
Between going down and seeing each other at the blue-white game, and we exchange numbers, and we have each other on social media and everything. So,
and you mentioned going to the blue-white game. You were a pretty frequent visitor to Penn State, you know, during the spring and into last fall. What did you pick up from your spring practice visits, particularly because you're watching the team that you're going to join? Whereas last year at the games, it's a cool experience, but so many of those guys were going to be moving on.
So I kind of took it as I'm like a part of the team, and I think I thought of that early on when I started going, because I go down there so much. I started getting more comfortable. I started learning the playbook recently, so I go down there and then I look at some of the plays and I know some of it. So I'm learning mentally, like I said before. So Coach Sider and Coach Walker have done a good job with me.
What goes into this as far as the biggest challenge that you anticipate beyond your continued physical recovery? What's kind of the hurdle that you think you're going to have to clear to get where you want to be as a college football player?
The hurdle that I'll have to go over through. I'm not completely sure yet, because I mean, I've just been going through some stuff at home, you know, with my knee and stuff, and then school has been a little challenging because I had to get all my work in before I left. So I mean, I think I've gotten a little mental training and a little mental toughness going through these past couple months. But I don't know. I just got to keep doing what I'm doing, you know, keep lifting, keep doing all the stuff that I have to do, school, and then keep working myself, rehab. I know you said not physically, but, you know, just train myself mentally overall.
London, Penn State announced you back in December at 5'10", 180 pounds. I'm not sure where you are now. I don't know if that's changed. Are you still in that ballpark? Have you added some weight? Have you lost some weight?
Well, I lost some weight from the surgery. But yeah, it was I had to put that weight back on. So I'm around the same area right now. But yeah, I'm building muscle mass right now, and I'm getting my legs and arms stronger right now as we speak.
Well, it's been a little while since we got to see you out on the field doing damage against defenses, but for those who have not seen your junior highlights or the highlights that preceded your injury, how would you describe the scouting report on London Montgomery as a running back prospect?
I like to humbly say that, you know, I'm fast. I have some speed with me. I ran a 10.7 in 100 meter. I have great vision, great patience. I could wait for my line to block for me and make a move. I could make a man miss. I just see things before they happen. So it's just like instinct to me.
You gave the Southern running backs a lot of credit for their speed earlier, but how about the Pennsylvania running backs that have come through town and had success, whether it's Miles Sanders, Saquon Barkley, Journey Brown, now Nick Singleton, and next up is you, London. What has that meant to you, the aspect of staying home and playing this particular position in a Penn State uniform?
I just got some big shoes to fill, you know. Nick Singleton, Saquon, Miles, Journey, they all Saquon left a legacy. They all did, and Nick is too. So I'm going to try to do the same things they did and, try to fill those shoes.
What was it like watching Nick and Catron Allen do what they did as freshmen, first year on campus, and the way it ended in the Rose Bowl with that success from start to finish? What did you take away from their first season at the college level?
I always want to say I forgot Catron. I'm sorry. He's going to leave a legacy too. They're both going to be first rounders, I think. But watching them, I could learn a few things. Just going down there so much, like I said, watching practices and stuff and being in the meeting rooms. They just know everything like that. So, you know, just being in there, knowing some of the plays, hearing them out when Coach Sider is talking to them, that definitely helps, because I'm looking at the board and seeing stuff that I didn't know before, and then I'm picking up on it. And watching them on the field, I learned a few things, whether it's blocking, just the footwork and everything, and drills and everything.
What stands out about the way Jawan Sider addresses his players, coaches his players in those practice settings? We get a bit of a peek once a week as media members, but you've got a pretty long look. What do you take away from that experience?
He's very comfortable with his running backs, and he jokes around with them, but he knows when it's time to work, and he pushes them very hard, and I'm looking forward to that. So, yeah.
I'd imagine you got a pretty good feel for the team's confidence when you were on campus this spring. I mean, it's hard to ignore coming off of how they finished last year with what they returned. You're going to be part of that. You're entering a locker room that lost some serious leaders from last year, but there's a ton of talent and maybe some emerging leaders that we're going to get to know. What's your sense of this 2023 Penn State football team that you're about to jump into?
I can only say so much, but we're going to be dangerous this year after going to see some of those practices, how we compete against each other. Even though we're just practicing, we go hard. And, I just can't wait to join them and help the team get better.
Have you gotten some feedback from members of your freshman class that got to campus in January and went through their first 15 practices and had the winter conditioning? Have you gotten some, I guess, some helpful feedback from any members of that group in particular?
Yeah, they just told me what it was going to be. Like, they just kept it real with me. They said it's going to be hard, but you know, it's going to be adjustable for me. And they adjusted and they're doing well. So I think I'm going to follow behind them and I think I'm going to do good with them.
Beyond football, what are you bringing to Happy Valley in terms of interest? What do you want to accomplish during your time on campus that has nothing to do with carrying the football and making defenders miss or get thrown on the ground?
I just want to show everybody my personality. I think I have a bright personality. I like making people laugh and stuff. You know, just being a good person overall, doing good and kind things for people. Just doing some justice around maybe. I don't know. I haven't thought about it that much yet. So.
And who's making the trip over to campus with you next weekend when you pack up your things and maybe forget a few things, but you don't live too far from home, so they can always find your way to you on campus. But what's that, travel group going to look like?
That's going to consist of my dad, my mom, my stepmom, my brother, my best friend. He's probably going to come with me. He's going to Seton Hill. But yeah, those are just the main people and some others, maybe people who helped me come this far. And, you know, I like to thank them one last time when they dropped me off.
Now, are you the kind of guy who's going to let some emotions pour out of you next weekend when they get in the car and drive off? Or are you going to kind of keep that stiff upper lip and keep it moving?
Hey, I'm going to try to hide my pride, but I'm probably not going to be able to. So, I mean, it is what it is. And I'm going to miss my parents and I'm going to miss everyone back home. But this is the next chapter in life, so I'm ready for it.
Do you know who your roommate's going to be?
I'm not sure yet, but I'm hoping to get Cam Wallace.
Okay, yeah, good luck. A pretty important thing, freshman year roommate, can set the tone for you in a few different ways. Well, London, what's your message? I'll just give the mic to you. No question about who you are and what this is going to be like at Penn State, the upcoming run.
I just like to say I'm a humble guy who's ready to work, who's ready to compete, and who's ready to make the team better. And I think that this 2023 football team is going to be something special.
All right, very cool. London, we look forward to seeing you here on campus very soon and on the field even not too long after that. Good luck with the continued recovery process. Good to hear you're in a good place there. And thank you so much for opening up about your journey with us here on the Lions 24/7 podcast.
Of course, anytime.
We'll be right back on the Lions 24/7 podcast.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Greetings, Fantasy Warriors. I'm Heath Cummings, your guide to fantasy dominance on FFT Dynasty. Join me this offseason where mock drafts become epic showdowns and every pick shapes your legacy.
If I was Adam, with the team that he's built, Will Levis makes so much more sense.
And that's not all. We're peeling back the curtain on the future with our exclusive 2024 NFL Draft Prospect Profiles. Uncover hidden gems that'll elevate your roster to legendary status.
Puka Nacua. After Cooper Kupp, we really have no idea who's going to get the targets.
Keaton Mitchell of East Carolina. Explosive speed is ridiculous.
This isn't just a podcast. It's a playbook for champions. Subscribe to FFT Dynasty now, and together, we'll conquer the fantasy football frontier. Your dynasty journey starts here.
Great stuff from London Montgomery. Looking forward to what his Penn State future holds. We'll find out a lot more in the coming years, and we'll talk about it here on the podcast. But Daniel Gallen and Mark Brennan now join us. We have a lot to get into. Some basketball conversation coming your way in a few minutes. That roster build hit a few obstacles in the last couple of days, and we'll address that and how things are shaping up for Mike Rhodes from a personnel standpoint. But gentlemen, we have to begin this discussion with the transfer portal on the football field, because For a while now, we've identified defensive tackle as an area that Penn State was going to look at coming off of spring practice. James Franklin publicly put that out there as they wrapped up the blue-white matchup a few weeks ago. And Alonzo Ford turns out to be the guy who fits the bill. An Old Dominion defensive tackle transfer, listed 6'3", 275 pounds, played for Ricky Ronnie, obviously familiar face around here to the staff. An all-Sun Belt honorable mention last season, 32 tackles, five of those coming behind the line of scrimmage, and 3.5 sacks as a sophomore. That's right, he is a sophomore, so this is not a one-and-done situation. You slot him in as a guy who's going to give you something this year, and then you build off that moving ahead. And Daniel, I mean, this is just something coming to fruition that we've been forecasting for, 4 months, it feels like.
Definitely. I think that James Franklin was pretty explicit about what he wanted and what he needed in the portal, and they went out and got it. I like the profile of Alonzo Ford as a player who isn't coming in just for 1 year. He's not a graduate transfer with 1 year of eligibility left. He'll have 3 years to play too. So you can figure out, you know, where he fits in, what he needs to do, how ready he is for the Big Ten. And then you can see how he fits into the depth chart. I think that you have to replace PJ Mustipher, which is a really tough thing to do. There aren't many people like that around. There aren't many people like that in the portal. But I think that if you can raise the floor of the room a little bit and add a little bit more upside, I think Alonzo Ford is someone that really, really does that. So I think that that's one of those positions, both sides of the trenches, you can never have too many bodies because you never know what's going to happen. You want to keep guys fresh. Losing one or two guys can really set you back at those positions. So I really like this pickup. And I think it comes at a good time, at a position of need.
Mark, to me, this pickup, the Potts pickup in April, and he'll be on campus in just a couple of weeks, by the way, those are addressing not obvious glaring needs. Like, if you were to look at Penn State from an outside perspective, you wouldn't say, like, they really need to add a running back or they really need to add a defensive tackle based on what they return, based on the experience in those spots, based on some of the rising talent. And yet, this is a team that wants to make sure they're buttoned up and ready for a Big Ten championship push, to be one of those top four teams in the nation when the college football playoff gets sorted out. And it feels like pickup like this, pickup like the Potts edition, maybe what they're working on behind the scenes, adding another veteran cornerback now that Storm Duck is gone, those add up and they can avoid some pitfalls as the season wears on and you lose guys to injury.
Yeah, I think you touched on it. I mean, the key to being one of the best teams in the Big Ten and competing for a conference championship is not necessarily just having the starters, but building that depth. I mean, what have we seen the last couple of years on that defensive line? You know, you never know what's going to come up over the summer or in the preseason, whether it's injuries, whether it's, you know, guys not playing for whatever reason. We had Izzard and Vilbert both last year, you know, disappeared for the first few games. And Izzard came back, you know, relatively early, some people don't. So I think just building that depth is the key to the programs that are kind of shooting to be the best of the best. And that's what James Franklin talked about after the blue-white game. It's like, you know, he's not going to say this is a luxury pickup, you know, but it is. I mean, they have decent depth at defensive line. They're still looking to get another receiver, which you would say they're already bringing in two receivers. So if you're able to get one beyond that, you're building up that depth that's going to protect you against injuries, against off-field issues, against whatever may come up. And I think this just kind of falls into that category.
Interestingly here, Ford was a high school teammate of Kavion Keys, four-star linebacker signing for Penn State, who's about to join this roster in May. And Ford was outside the top 2,000 overall. One of those cool stories. I mean, we covered this with Arnold Ebikade a couple years back, and he became a first-team All-Big Ten player. He only had 1 year to get it right at the Power 5 level. But you remember looking back and two-star level kind of talent, you know, jockeying to try to get an FBS opportunity. And that's kind of where it was with Alonzo Ford, excuse my voice here. So now all of a sudden, through 3 years of his college career, that's not necessarily a long time, he's part of the defensive plan for what we think will be maybe the best defense in the Big Ten and a team that's going to be challenging. So you love these kind of stories. It's not always about the five-star prospect coming out of high school that you're able to pick up 2 or 3 years down the road. It's about the guy that maybe you weren't paying attention to, or the guy that maybe was kind of on your radar but didn't match your prospect profile at the time. he's blossomed. You have a need, and it's a fit, and we'll see where it goes from here. We got a lot more to learn about Ford, but add into that list of transfers. Potts coming to campus in just a little while. We've got a story up about Dante Cephas at the site right now, Kent State receiver who's been committed to the program since January. And guys, these confirmations are coming in. This roster is going to grow in May. It's going to grow again in June. And just a reminder that as that post-spring transfer portal window closed on April 30th, graduates still can still enter the portal. So you're talking about other rosters and maybe guys entering the portal as graduates. And we're talking about the Nittany Lions roster. We've got graduation coming up here on campus. Some have completed their academic studies. Have they decided they've completed their football experience here at Penn State? Some of those questions remain unresolved, and we'll continue to learn more about the team. By the time we get into June, we should have a really good sense about what is going to be on the practice field come August for the Nittany Lions, when high expectations are going to be out there. Let's dive into the draft conversation from a different angle, fellas, because we did it on Tuesday, looking back at the 2023 Penn State rookie class, six draft picks there, a few undrafted free agents who are going to get their shot in some camps coming up. But Daniel, you put together a piece, and this is a staple this time of year, the days after the draft, a look ahead at what's next, who's next. And there's a lot to work your way through when you look at the Nittany Lions' potential for the 2024 NFL. And by the way, if you're looking at mock drafts already, the way too early variety, you're seeing that flash in a big way already. Three players appear to be staples largely. It's sometimes hit or miss with all three, but Chop Robinson, Olu Fashanu, and then who's the third I missed? Kalen King, yeah. are all being pegged in that first round. And Daniel, it goes deeper than that.
Definitely. I think starting with those three guys, you know, we knew we were going to see Olu in there. You know, we probably would have seen him in that range this year if he'd stayed in the draft. So all the eyeballs are going to be on him, which is going to be, I think, pretty interesting and fun to watch this year. And then Kalen King is someone who I think last year really with all the attention he was getting with teams, you know, maybe avoiding Joey Porter Jr. at times, you know, he was up to the task. You know, he's kind of up next, and who is going to break that streak of being a first round pick? I think that he believes he can do it. So, you know, he has high expectations to live up to as well. Chop Robinson was of the three guys that kept popping up in those way too early mock drafts. He was the one I was kind of surprised to see in there. But the more I thought about it, the more it made sense a little bit, where he's someone who plays a premium position. There's always going to be a demand for edge rushers. Those guys are always going to go a little bit higher. And then he was productive last year. You know, he comes from a program that has a reputation of churning out some pretty good to decent, you know, to really good defensive players. So he's someone who's going to be on the radar. I think that his development under Deion Barnes is going to be interesting to watch this year. But, you know, moving on from those three guys, it's a really, really fun selection. I mean, Johnny Dixon, Daquan Hardy is a potential guy, you know, given his experience, his athletic traits. Adisa Isaac, I think, is someone like Chop Robinson. When you talk about that edge rusher position and someone who physically has the tools, it's going to be really, really, I think, really cool to see how that shakes out. And then just going down the list that I posted, Curtis Jacobs, Theo Johnson, let's see, Keandre Lambert-Smith, even Hunter Norzad. I think that there's, you know, it's a really, really deep selection. And I think that, you know, on top of those, you know, three projected first rounders, when you're in day two, you know, we saw four guys go on day two this year. That could be a similar result next year.
Yeah. And look, I mean, we talked about this a little bit toward the end of last season, I think, when Joey Porter was ruled out and then eventually opted out, about, hey, who are you taking between those two cornerback prospects? And I know that debate is going to go on into the next year. We're going to get a longer look at Kalen King in year three. We saw 3 years of Joey Porter as a starter. But Mark, I'll ask you again, now that we're coming up for some air after spring ball, the hype train on Kalen King is not slowing down. He finished on a high note in the Rose Bowl with an acrobatic interception. He's getting preseason All-American accolades. What do you think? I mean, we don't want to put too much of a jinx on anyone about breaking that round one streak at defensive back, but Kalen King already felt like he was going to be the second guy to do it. Anything in your mind where you think that Kalen King does actually go out there and deliver a season that validates our conversation that he might be better than Joey Porter? I mean, do you think he can go out and do that?
Well, the good news is if he does, we have all of the stories written about Penn State having the first defensive back ever going in the first round. But listen, I was in the middle of that conversation, and I think I sparked it, not taking credit for it, but just, you know, not that we went back and forth about it. But one thing I said several months ago was that I think Kalen King is more of a, you know what he's going to be in the NFL. Joey Porter Jr., I think it's a high risk, high reward. You think he's going to be really good because he has the measurables. He has all those things, but I don't think it necessarily translated into his on-field production. I think when you look at Kalen King, he was a guy who did it game in and game out. So does he have a chance to be an all-pro at the next level? Maybe not, but I think he's going to be a guy who's in a league for a long, long time. And it's going to depend on where people are drafting, obviously. But to me, I think if you're spending a first-round draft pick, you know, one thing I think may have bumped Joey Porter Jr. down was that he didn't have the interception numbers. He didn't have some of the he had a bunch of penalties a couple years ago, those types of things. And again, I think he can be terrific. I think he can be. He could be. But I think Kalen King is going to be a guy who's going to be, you know, you're going to get a productive, number one or a first team cornerback in the NFL for multiple years. So I do think he's going to be the first guy who breaks that. And we actually had kind of a back and forth, as I remember. And I said, if I had to pick one, he would be the one that I picked, only because you kind of know what you're going to get. But both guys are really good cornerbacks. I mean, it's nitpicking, but I do think he's going to be the guy who ends up ending the streak.
It says a lot about what the cornerback room is right now and the guys who are emerging at the top of it. And Daniel, look, the fascinating thing is here, we'll see what the speed looks like for Kalen King come the combine, come the pro day. Can he get that in low 4.4s? Can he establish himself as one of the swifter cornerbacks and match that with what we assume will be really strong game tape? Crazy thing here is Chop Robinson's 40-yard dash is already where it needs to be. Now can he fill out the game tape as a defensive end, year two in the position, and match that with what I anticipate to be a sparks flying kind of combine performance when he gets that opportunity? It's all out there on the table for Chop Robinson.
Chop Robinson could really be kind of the first feather in the cap for Deion Barnes. When you talk about Chop Robinson transferring in after being an outside linebacker at Maryland, converting to defensive end, and now he'll have that full-time coaching from Deion Barnes through this first full offseason as a defensive end here at Penn State. So you know, I'm really, really interested to see what kind of steps he can take forward. He's someone that we're penciling in the starting lineup this year, even though he was kind of that third starter at defensive end behind Tarburton and Isaac last year. I think Robinson is someone who I think that this has kind of been projected to a little bit. You might forget about it that, you know, he was a five-star recruit coming out of Quince Orchard. You know, there is the expectation that when you're a five-star that you will go in the first round a couple of years later. I think that his route has been a little bit circuitous, with the position change, with being at Maryland, with being a, not part-time, but maybe a three-quarter time player last year, the way that they rotated those defensive ends. But he's someone who is really, really poised to take a leap. And I think that it is really worth noting that he's on the radar of these draft draft gurus, and that he is on the radar as this kind of prospect as we go into the year.
And just rounding it out with these projected round one guys and the headliner of the group, you're seeing him inside the top five on many cases. And we're all kind of surprised we're still covering him here in State College, Olu Fashanu. And Mark, it is a different dynamic, though. I mean, we're gearing up towards Olu's second year as a starter. Last year, he had that one start under his belt in the Outback Bowl. And we were all saying, okay, is he going to be your left tackle? Is he ready for this? By the time we got to October, we were seeing him pop up as a first rounder in mock drafts, and there was starting to be that buzz. I feel like as things started to reach a crescendo with the noise around him, he's hurt, he's sidelined, we don't talk to him for a while, and all of a sudden he's back here. There's a bullseye on his back, and there's going to be a lot of attention. There's going to be a lot of scrutiny, rep by rep, game by game, when he has some marquee matchups against defensive ends. I think he's up for the task, but buckle up because it's going to be fun, and you're going to be hearing a lot about Olu on a weekly basis.
Yeah, but what's the one thing that we've heard about Olu is that the thing that makes him so good is he's a grinder. He has the physical talent. I mean, if you look at this guy, I mean, he is massive. He's got that, but you have to have more than that to be that top 10 pick. And he's the guy who just is nose to the grindstone and gets after it. And the one thing, I'll tell you what the thing that I saw in the blue-white game that really jumped out to me, and this may sound silly, but Amari Evans gets that the penalty for flipping the ball after the touchdown, and he has to do the up-downs down on the sideline near the end zone. And as he's doing those, this is like a couple minutes later, Olu walks down and talks to him. You know, that's leadership. That's, and, you know, from what Amari told us, it was like, yeah, you can't do that. You know, when you score, you have to act like you kind of been there, and, you know, you can't hurt us with that sort of penalty. And I think that's the sort of thing. And then when you talk to him face to face, I mean, when he gets in the situation where he's doing these interviews with scouts and general managers and whatnot, he's going to absolutely blow them away. So he's going to check the athletic, the size, all of those things. He's going to check all those boxes, the work ethic, and then all the intangibles. And I think that people are seeing that entire package. And it was one thing to just kind of project off of what people were seeing on the field last year. That, wow, you have this left tackle who's just absolutely dominating and doing a great job. But I think the more people learn about Olu, the stronger his draft stock is going to be. And it was already way up there. But we've seen that it only takes a question or two for somebody's draft stock to kind of tumble, fairly or unfairly. But with this guy, I just think there's so much there that, barring injury and knock on wood that he stays healthy, that he's definitely going to be way, way up there.
Yeah. Reminder that he was declared a team captain at the conclusion of spring practice, and that he is the highest GPA on this entire football roster, along with the highest draft grade right now. It's a pretty damn good combination for Olu Fashanu. Looking at some of the other guys on this list, I think the name that jumps out to me, we got to remember, he was a really good blue chip prospect coming out of high school in Virginia, is Keandre Lambert Smith. I mean, it's kind of been a meandering journey of sorts at times as he's tried to, you know, crack through and be a consistent figure for this passing attack, and a guy who's going to put up big numbers. Remember, last year, through the first 11 games of the season, he had 16 catches, 182 yards, and 2 touchdowns. The last 2 games of the season combined, he goes for 207 yards and 2 touchdowns on 8 catches. So had that springboard. He went from a guy that we were wondering, is he going to be on the team in 2023? Is this going to be the right fit for him? To now being a lead component of this offensive plan. We saw when NBC sent their production team to campus a week ago, he's one of the guys out there with the camera on his face. So, hey, this is a guy who's been waiting for this kind of a spotlight. Penn State just lost its top 3 receptions leader from 2022 and Brenton Strange, Parker Washington, and Mitchell Tinsley. And Keandre Lambert-Smith is one of the fastest guys on this team. He's going to be one of the fastest wide receivers in the draft when he gets to that point. But he's got to prove it with the production, and he's got the kind of trigger man in Drew Aller that can put the ball on the money, we think, when given those opportunities. Daniel, again, it's all out there for Keandre Lambert-Smith.
I think Lambert Smith right now has the highlight reel and the testing numbers that will make him someone that is on the radar, you know, could be someone that an NFL team is interested in. And I think over the course of this year, it's going to be, you know, kind of his job to put that tape together. You know, he's going to be playing in the slot. That's something a little bit that we haven't seen that much of yet. That's going to be a new experience for him. And it's going to be something else that he can put on tape to show to NFL teams. And then I think the one thing that I'm really curious about is this leadership side of him, you know, the mental side of the game. That's something that has always been talked about with him and in his development and how he handles success, how he handles failure. And it seems like he's made some really good strides with that. And I'm curious what that looks like now that he's a senior, you know, in that wide receiver room. You know, he's pretty much the guy, you know, he's the one who has been around the longest, who has the most experience, and that the younger guys are really going to look to, you know, how is he going to take to this role? You know, how is that going to make him a more well-rounded prospect, a more well-rounded person even? So he's someone who has a really big year coming up. But, you know, the NFL likes its wide receivers. They want wide receivers. We saw Parker Washington, who didn't go through the pre-draft process really at all, get drafted after his injury. So, I think that Keandre Lambert-Smith is someone who, you know, you know, midseason, I think if he has a good start, if he's putting all of this together, we're really going to start hearing about as a potential draft pick.
The last couple of years combined for Keandre Lambert-Smith, 58 catches, about 900 yards, and 7 touchdowns. He did play as a freshman in 2020. He did start as a freshman in 2020. Of course, like everyone in 2020, that year of eligibility does not apply to him. So technically, he's got more in his back pocket at the college football level, but it feels like this is the moment for Keandre Lambert-Smith. And then a couple other members of that 2020 class I wanted to focus on here with you, Mark. One on the offensive side, one on defense. You call him the big dog. Curtis Jacobs at linebacker, a third-year starter now. We've seen him at a couple different positions. Maybe a guy who's kind of going under the radar right now when you review the names on this defense and what Manny Diaz is working with. Curtis Jacobs, for a guy who's played as much football, doesn't get as mentioned as much as you may think. And then the other side of it, Theo Johnson, recently in the headlines for the wrong reasons. He's got some legal issues to deal with. But we know all about his athletic pedigree. We've talked about what he would probably do in an NFL combine setting. And yet, hasn't had that opportunity to showcase himself as the number one tight end. And he's also been dinged up at times. We didn't see him this spring. So those two are, I wanted to get to with you.
Yeah, let's get it straight. Curtis Jacobs calls me the big dog. All right. I'm the big dog. And for people who don't know, he jokingly called me big dog before the Citrus Bowl at a press conference, to which I didn't even realize at the time. Daniel brought it up and everybody was busting me about it. But, you know, the thing I saw in all seriousness about Curtis Jacobs, we saw some of these 40-yard dash numbers that popped up online, and he was, I think, 4.46. And I'm thinking, wow, that is, you know, that's impressive for a linebacker. And he's a guy who's played in the box. He's played outside. He's been productive wherever he's been. And I think he's going to be the sort of NFL – I don't know how high he's going to go, but I think he's a guy who's going to have a productive NFL career. Theo Johnson, I think he hit on it. I mean, listen, he got in a little bit of trouble off the field. Let's see how that plays out. But that doesn't seem to be tremendously serious to me, not downplaying anything that went on there. We'll have to see how the legal system plays out. But given the charges, it doesn't look like it's something that would impact him, you know, long term football wise. But yeah, I mean, he's got to stay healthy. Because he's big and he's fast and he's talented and he has all these things going for him. But if you're the old cliche, the best ability is availability. If you're not available all the time, that's another one of those check marks that kind of works against you when draft time sort of rolls around. The thing that you really like about him is that when people really started to focus on Brenton Strange last year, Theo Johnson stepped up later in the season and became one of their go-to receivers. You look at his yards per catch. I don't have it right here in front of me, but, you know, it was significant. I think it's like 16 yards or 17 yards.
16.4 that led all Penn State players.
Yeah. I mean, whatever he's listed at, you know, 6'5", 6'6", 260 pounds. I mean, that's significant for somebody that size. So, he has all those things going for them. I think both of those guys. And then I think the other guy that we should mention is Adisa Isaac. Mm-hmm. Came back from injury last year. Interesting to see how he does in year two back from that injury, because we've seen that sometimes with these lower body injuries, it takes you can be productive that first year, but do you regain everything kind of that second year? So I think he's another guy that I'm really keeping an eye on.
Specifically with that Achilles injury, you hear it at all levels of sports and all different kinds of sports that's one that can take some time to work your way back from. Even when you're engaged on it for a season, it may take that second season to get fully back. And that was a big motivating factor when we talked to Adisa Isaac out in Pasadena about his looming decision. Was he going to take a shot in the NFL after four years on campus, or was he going to stick around for a fifth year? And the chance to spend an entire offseason with Chuck Losey and his staff and getting his body right and being able to not spend half of the year rehabbing, instead focused on growth at the defensive end position and putting himself in a good spot to boost his stock. That's going to really pay off, I think, as the season wars on. I mean, the way he finished last year, late in Big Ten play, and then in the Rose Bowl, you saw it. He was a much different player than the guy who showed up on the field on the road at Purdue in at the end of August last year. So really curious to see what that looks like. Like, as you said, and sticking with some of the elder statesmen. Oh, 1 second before I get there. You mentioned Theo Johnson's breakout. I wanted to just put a stamp on that. He had 19 total receiving yards through Penn State's 5-1 start. Then Daniel Gallen on a press conference with Mike Yurcich asked about that lack of production and if Theo Johnson was going to see more action. The rest of the way, it sparked something. I'll tell you what. He had a reception of at least 25-plus yards in 6 of the last 7 games. He had 4 touchdowns during that span, 16.4 yards per catch. Again, that led all of Penn State. So Daniel Gallen with the big assist. But it was a huge emerging dynamic for this offense as things kind of to the detriment of the stat sheet for Brenton Strange, but certainly helped out this offense. Daniel, the elder statesman, though, as I just was getting to before, I wanted to throw up that Theo Johnson note. You got guys like Daquan Hardy, Johnny Dixon, Hakeem Beamon, Hunter Norzad, who started off in the Ivy League, you know, down to dwindling eligibility. I don't know where you go here. I pointed Dixon as the guy who can really blow up his draft stock in a notable way. I'm not sure how many people realize how big of a role he's going to play here in year 3 from that transfer out of South Carolina. He played a lot last year. He was a co-starter for much of the season with Kalen King, opposite of Joey Porter Jr. Now we're talking about a new role, though. A guy who's going to be, we think, locked in as a starting cornerback, but also a guy who can slide into the slot position, where we know in nickel coverage, that's where you're going to see a lot of Daquan Hardy, but Johnny Dixon can fill that role. He can fill that role that Jair Brown filled last year in the Prowler package, show off some of his arsenal near the line of scrimmage, which was a huge ability of his last year, getting after ball carriers, attacking quarterbacks in the pocket even. So that's where I land. I don't know if you have a case to make for one of the other guys, but in terms of players who are up against it eligibility-wise, there's opportunities there.
I think Dixon and Norzad are the two that stand out from that group to me. Yeah, you're right about Dixon in terms of he is someone who can really come onto the radar this year, really show what he can do. He's already shown that inside-outside versatility. He's shown that he can blitz. He's shown that he's not afraid to mix it up in the backfield with quarterbacks or wide receivers. You know, he can take on bigger blockers. And so, you know, I think that a little bit of writing on the wall with Storm Duck transferring out, who was someone that we had kind of penciled in as a co-starter with Dixon. I think that kind of indicates the type of spring that Johnny Dixon had. So I think that he's someone who's really poised to, yeah, really, really break out. You know, I think that, you know, he's a decently known quantity around, you know, with Penn State fans, but I think nationally he's going to be someone that there's going to be a lot of talk about. And then with Norzad, you know, getting this full off season in the Penn State strength program. You know, we saw that he could play guard last year, moving to center. He's going to have that versatility, you know, bit of a, you know, pretty big stereotype with the Ivy Leaguer, but he's a smart player. And I think that there's going to be things there that NFL teams are going to be interested in. You know, I think the fact that he played tackle, even though it was in the Ivy League, and you know, he might not necessarily have the size to do that in the Big Ten or, you know, in the NFL. But I think that that's something, too, that shows that he's got versatility, that he has a lot of experience. By the end of this year, even with missing that COVID year when the Ivy League didn't play, he's still going to have a lot of football under his belt. So, you know, and I think, too, something that I touched on a little bit is that this offensive line is going to have so many eyes on it this year because of Olu. And you hear those stories, you know, every year, you know, even in recruiting and scouting, where it's, well, I turned on the tape to watch this guy, but this guy is the one who stood out to me. Then I noticed this guy. So I think that as you go across that offensive line, it's a ton of experienced guys. I think the projected starting five is all draft eligible players. You know, there's going to be a lot of eyeballs on those guys. They can really make an impression at the next level. And yeah, I think that Hunter Norzad, you know, given what he's done, what we think he can do, I think he's really, really going to benefit from those extra eyeballs. And, you know, we'll see what that does for him next spring.
Sal Wormley, Caden Wallace, a couple other year five guys at the college level to keep an eye on the offensive line. We have a lot to talk about football. Our next football conversation is never far away, but there's been so much happening in the basketball sector. And for everyone wanting to hear about the other draft prospects, you know the deal with 2025. There's a lot cooking there. You know what the freshman class did last year. We'll put that one off for a little ways longer, but if you think the 2024 class could be good, wow, the follow-up to that could be even better, and that's where you want to be as a program. Look, Alabama, Ohio State, they don't take years off producing first-round talent, and it looks like Penn State's in a good spot to go successive years here where there are multiple players being considered legitimately inside of round one. But, guys, basketball roster build hit a bit of a snag in the last 24 hours or so. We'll talk about the more recent additions that we haven't gotten to you on the podcast yet, but we got to begin with some bad news. And Evan Mahaffey, not just deciding he's not going to stick with Penn State, but deciding he's going to go play for a Big Ten opponent. Daniel, this one stinks.
Definitely. I think the old staff under Micah Shrewsbury, when they talked about that class of 2025, he was definitely, I think, the foundational piece of it, you know, beyond just what we thought he would be capable of on the court. I mean, you look at him, he had that length, 6'6", long arms, had the ability to handle the ball. You know, we saw him be in the right place at the right time in a couple of really key junctures down the stretch. You know, played with great energy. The jump shot was a work in progress and something that he really wanted to work on this offseason, but he was regarded as the leader of that group, that, you know, wherever he went, the other guys would go. I think, I forget if it was Micah Shrewsbury or Adam Fisher joked that by the time his career was over at Penn State, he was going to be the mayor of State College, just based on the personality, based on the demeanor. And so, you know, it really stings, especially when you think about how he could project in the Mike Rhodes system with that length, with that ability to cause some havoc, with that athleticism, and, you know, looking at some of the longer forwards that Penn State had also brought in, you know, you had the potential to put a really, really interesting group of players on the court. But, you know, Penn State's going to see him at least twice this winter. You know, Ohio State is one of the home and away opponents. We saw Penn State face Jamari Wheeler three times a couple years ago when they also played them in the Big Ten tournament. But I think that this, if you could get Evan Mahavy to stay, I think the ceiling on this team would go up a little bit. And so now you're just kind of back to the drawing board a little bit, back to, you know, seeing how else you can massage this roster, what else is out there.
Although we saw the complete exodus of Penn State's 2023 recruiting class on the basketball court, you know, guys popping up at Notre Dame now. And what do we make of the retention that has been accomplished to this point, Mark? Because this is a blow, and you're losing them to the Buckeyes, and that hurts. But this is the first one of those where a guy has wandered off and has not come back. In terms of players that are retained from last year's roster run, what do you think is the most important one thus far?
I wanted to add something on Mahaffey, which my Ohio State peeps told me about, and I don't know how much of this was out there because I didn't get a chance to really read up on it from the Ohio State perspective. But you know, they were in the running for Bronny James and had one scholarship left. And this is kind of an indication that they're tapping out on Bronny James and saying that's not going to happen. And I think Evan Mahaffey might have been trending back toward Penn State had he not had the opportunity to get this offer from Ohio State. So, you know, that sometimes things happen in sort of a weird way. He's a Cincinnati kid. You know, if you look at his
the Cincinnati kid, though.
Right. He's not the, he's A. We all know that Anitas Hawkins is the Cincinnati kid. sorry, Sean Clifford. Yeah, I mean, if you look at his announcement, it was all about, hey, I'm coming home. I'm going to, you know, whatever, I'm home. I'm happy, whatever. So that just to follow up on what Daniel said, you know, I don't think Kebba was ever kind of heading back. We'll see how that plays out. But I think Mahaffey was a guy that they had a chance to keep. And I think his long-term upside, you know, I was very high on Kebba, and I think he has an opportunity going back to that discussion to be an NBA player. But I think Mahaffey was more of, you knew you were going to get a really good player for sure for the next several years. So that one's tough. And in terms of, you know, who they're able to retain, you know, I think Jameel Brown, we talked about it. People didn't get a great opportunity to see him last year, but for a couple reasons, because from everything we're hearing, he developed into an outstanding shooter over the course of the year. They didn't really need him because Funk was playing so many minutes, but I think he's going to be able to step in. And then also he kind of keeps that Philadelphia pipeline established. You know, he's a guy from Philly that if he does well, other Philly kids are going to see. And we all know how important that's been to Penn State over the last several years. So for those two reasons, I would say Jameel.
All right, Daniel, you've done a great job at Lions 24/7 doing the roster reset updates on our site. And they've been very necessary of late because of all the developments. And by the way, Blue Kane, who was discussed on our last episode of the podcast, Tyler Calvaruso breaking down his game and potentially an addition late to the 2023 class out of IMG Academy. He ends up committing to Georgia on Wednesday, so cross him off the list for potential pickups at Penn State. But a couple more to discuss. They got a big man out of Georgetown. They got a forward out of Lafayette more locally. What do you make of these additions, Daniel?
Yeah, I think that they fit into two different buckets. I think Quidus Wahab coming from Georgetown, I think that he pencils in as that really necessary playable size to have down low that we saw that last year. You know, we saw Kev Ajayi make those strides, but you know, there were long stretches where Penn State didn't really have that, you know, playable size that you could rely on. I know that Wahab struggled in his first go around in the Big Ten at Maryland 2 years ago. But you know, he's, you know, 6'11", 245. He's going to be in his fifth year. He spent three seasons in the Big East at Georgetown. I think that he's probably seen everything there is to see at this point. So I think bringing him into the fold, I think is a really, really solid sort of, you know, stopgap measure, especially with Kev Ajayi being in the portal. And yeah, we'll see what happens there. You know, but earlier this week we had a bit of an unexpected portal announcement that late Tuesday night, I guess, with Leo O'Boyle from Lafayette announcing that he is transferring to Penn State. He was a 40% three-point shooter for the Leopards last year, 11.6 points per game, 6'7". You know, Tyler Calvaruso did a good job on the site breaking down that, you know, he fits into a role in this Mike Rhodes offense that, you know, they'll really be able to plug him in there. And then on top of that, he's a Scranton kid, went to Scranton Prep. I covered two of his games in high school. Prep was going up against Imhotep, so didn't really end too well for Leo O'Boyle. But I think that that's just sort of a really solid addition to your roster at, you know, at this point in the portal, especially if you know, you know, what kind of role he's going to come in. So, you know, Penn State's up to 9. They got 4 spots left. And so far, I think you can start to see, you know, what Mike Rhodes wants, how this team is taking shape.
And Scranton Prep gets a couple shout outs on this podcast. We had London Montgomery starting off, and now you got Leo O'Boyle joining the basketball. By the way, you mentioned 9 guys on this roster, 6 of them transfer pickups that have happened fairly recently. It's all come together pretty quickly. You've got following Rhodes from VCU, Ace Baldwin and Nick Kern, Zach Hicks coming in from Temple, Puff Johnson from North Carolina, and then the two we just mentioned out of Lafayette and Georgetown. And Mark, how would you assess the process thus far of what Mike Rhodes and company have accomplished? And what would you kind of circle as the yet to be determined aspects of this roster if they want to have success in year one?
Yeah, I think about as good as could be expected. I mean, the fact that they were in with Blue Kane, I mean, that was from what I'm gathering, they finished second to Georgia there. Other people may say that it was Virginia that finished second. But regardless, I think the fact that you're in the final discussion there for a 4-star guy in 23 at this point with a completely new staff. But moving forward, I think if there's a way to keep Keba, you'd love to do it. I don't know that it's going to happen. But I think at this point, you're where you just want to get the best available players that you could get to fill spots. And I'm not saying just take players for the sake of taking them. That's kind of the opposite of what I'm saying. You know, identify, you know, who's the best and figure ways to make them work within your system. Because you have a couple guys from VCU who are going to be able to be kind of the leaders and, you know, carry those systems over. But you know, you still have to fill out some spots here. I mean, you have enough to field a team, obviously, and compete. But this is the new normal. I mean, so they're out there grinding, and I don't know that I would say you need this particular position or that position. I just think whoever the best players you can get them and bring them in, and don't settle, you know, for just bringing guys in for the sake of bringing them in.
Well, as basketball news continues to break and as the football news continues to break, it'll be all found at lions247.com. 30% off for an annual VIP subscription going on right now. $1 for 1 month if you want to take a peek. We got prospect camps coming up. We're excited to cover that. We got Elite 11 camp doing us the favor of coming right here to Happy Valley in a few weeks, which is very appreciated. So a lot happening behind the scenes. We've got some news about upcoming May enrollees as well. We're sending Daniel off on vacation, some time off. Well-earned, my friend. You've been grinding for a long time. So hopefully you can press pause. You won't hear him on the next couple of podcasts, and we'll get him back on soon after that. But hope you enjoy some time away. Mark, be talking to you real soon. Thanks, guys.
See ya.
Thanks, Tyler.
All right, good stuff from my colleagues at Lions 24/7 and Mark Brennan and Daniel Gallen. Thanks again to London Montgomery for joining us to look ahead to his Penn State career, which begins next weekend, and then he's in the classroom that following Monday. Life moves fast from recruit to freshman, and then all of a sudden you're in the thick of it. For now, I'm Tyler Donahue stepping aside. We're back with a couple more episodes at Lions 24/7 podcast next week. Between now and then, of course, you can catch all of our content at lions247.com. We'll talk to you real soon. Thanks for tuning in.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.